cliffcentral.com.
Whatever your term of endearment for your prize ride,
four banger, four by, barge, beater, Benz, big rig, bike, breezer, chori, chopper, flanker, crotch rocket, genka, hog, hypermiler, junker, combi, lambo, pimp mobile, pocket rocket, render rock scoot, shagging wagon, shitbox, tank, warrant wagon.
There's only one place to visit if you're looking to buy a new vehicle. Autotrader.co.za. With simple navigation and over 62,000 cars to choose from, it's a no-brainer. Visit autotrader.co.za today and find your next set of wheels.
Auto Central, powered by Autotrader on cliffcentral.com.
Right, good morning, folks. Welcome to Auto Central, motoring's biggest power hour, powered by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Yes, we took a couple of weeks off, but we're back with a bang. And in studio, George Minnie, CEO of Auto Trader, Chad Lookoff, top motoring journo. Hello, boys.
How's it?
Hello. How are you doing?
Back again, huh?
Yeah.
And Fazan is hiding in the corner in the studio, yeah, but anyway, we'll leave her there. So yeah, guys, good to be back. We did take some time off to kind of regroup, relook, and there was obviously a need for us to
recover.
Like Chad said, we took a bit of a holiday, and we're back on air, and it's really good to be back. So, Auto Central.
Rocking and rolling, yeah. A little bit of a change up in terms of the times and the frequency of the show and that. So
yes.
Those of you that are just tuning in, we've tried to promote it as best possible. But we're on to 10 to 11 now.
No, 10 to 11 on a Monday. Every second Monday.
So
yeah.
we hit one, miss one, hit one, miss one. It was a rough December and, recovering and we're getting into the motion again. So we're not biting off more than we can chew yet.
No, 100%.
But does the time really matter when the podcast lives forever?
Well, exactly. There's a podcast as well. So yes. Let's not forget that. But yes. I think this is actually a good time slot. We were just taking a look. I mean, a little bit of the promotion that we did this morning and some mad traction. So you guys are out there. You guys are listening. And
100%.
I think that's fantastic.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So really good to be back. And some awesome, some good stories that we're going to cover this morning. We've got a number of topics that we want to chat about. So I think let's dig straight into it. As you know, Auto Trader was the kind of digital sponsor for COTI 2017. For those of you who don't know or who are not aware.
Brilliant. Was the best one ever.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. The new format, the setup, it was really.
The judging and the results as well. And we're going to go into
that a little bit.
But that just, I think, elevated it. And I haven't come across anybody that's been involved with Car of the Year for several years and that sat there and said, well, the wrong car won. They all just sat there and said, nope, that's right, that's actually pretty spot on. So they're all in agreement with it. In the past couple of years, there's been a little bit of contention over, is that the right winner? A little uncertainty. And when the winner was announced, none of that sorts. It was just, that's the car.
Yeah.
You're actually quite correct. That's a cracking vehicle.
Well, we are talking about the new Opel Astra.
It was the one, yeah. It's your 2017 car of the year, the new Opel Astra and that.
100%. I must say, when they did make the announcement, I was shocked. If I was a betting man, my money wouldn't have been on that vehicle.
Exactly. Yeah, same.
But
it wasn't. My money wasn't.
Yeah.
And as a result, I walked away a little poorer. But in any case.
So you were a betting man. But then having chatted to the journos at the event, you kind of understood why that vehicle was selected. It just ticked all the boxes.
You need to know about the vehicle in order to understand that. And who knows the vehicles better than the journalists that have put it through its paces. And that's why they couldn't argue the point.
No, I agree. I mean, I think that car is an absolutely stunning car. My bets were on a different car, but that's probably just personal preference, and I'm a sample of one.
Yeah, so mine was the same. I'd sampled the majority of the vehicles that
you were lucky enough to
I've driven many of them.
Some of us have.
So
but anyway,
the ones that were like forerunners that were showing great excellence. We sat there and we said, okay, and we were basing our decision, our predictions, on previous years. And I'm not going to say that we were completely dumbfounded by the result, but it was just a pleasant surprise that it was, oh, okay, so it's that one now that's going to take it. No, I can see exactly why it's taken it.
Sure.
But, I was just basing it on, past results, which was incorrect because the problem has been rectified. Not that there really was a problem, but just the confusion and the lack of clarity.
Yeah.
That was present in previous years, no longer there. Now it's so transparent.
What fascinated me was how they hide this car away.
Oh, my
every
word.
Single year,
that is brilliant.
They find a new freaking place to hide this car. I did not see that coming. I didn't see the bar lifting. Although I suppose if you looked at the top, you could see the pulleys. But then who the hell would have known?
You know what I noticed? All the bottles on the shelves were empty.
Oh, no.
And I could see, no, those are glued down. What? Okay, so this is just a display bar. Okay, maybe because it's like a little pop-up in, you know, it was hosted at Kailami. So, you know, it's not a permanent structure. Okay, maybe it's just decorative. And, no, there's a car hiding behind it, people.
Yeah.
Well, a car hiding underneath it. It was absolutely
No, the
brilliant.
Reveal was
it's
spectacular.
Just, the reveal was unbelievable.
But let's just take a couple of steps back here.
Yeah.
So, Chad, and you obviously being a journalist, I know that there's 28 jurors who are obviously highly experienced, and they have to go through juror training for
Correct.
2 years before they're actually allowed to be involved in
They would pretty much be
event.
A... like a juror applicant, almost a probationary member.
All right.
A probationary jury. And they have to go through that where they need to mirror an established juror and see how he goes about things and go through that training. 2 years of that training. We say 2 years, but two events.
Okay.
You know, it needs to deal with two car of the years. And it is the whole process. We only see the final end result in that, but there are stringent test days that lead up to this where they put the 10 finalists through their paces.
Through their paces,
And it's not always 10 finalists. We ended up with 9 finalists. It started out as 10, and we had a withdrawal this year. But sometimes there will be 8 if there's only 8 vehicles that actually qualify. Yeah. Sometimes there's 12, but it's usually around 10 finalists.
So the guys won't, if only 8 cars are deemed to be
worthy
or good enough, then they won't just slot in another 2 cars
for the sake of it to make up the 10. No.
Okay. Fantastic.
No, they'll leave it. No, it's about the ones and zeros of it. Yeah. And it's, you know, doesn't need to conform to fastidious sort of traditions and that.
Sure.
It's, they're open-minded, and even the judging system has converted over into a digital system now.
Yeah, they built an app, and I believe we're the only country in the world that has an app that actually uses...
Let me tell you, the tip of Africa, we do some stuff.
Mm. That, yeah, 100%.
The rest of the world has to follow with, but you know what, because we're so small, we don't get recognized for it often.
But I can see that this technology, I think it was MAG... was the company? I stand on a correction. You'll have. I think you've got the details there.
Yeah.
That developed this app for the judging process.
Yeah.
So they were all the jurors were provided, and all the judges were provided with a tablet.
Yeah.
Well, the jury members, the jurors, and they were all provided with a tablet that had this app installed on it. And now this app and the software allowed them to enter their scores, and that was it. It was instantly submitted. There was no. It comes from an unknown. You know, there's.
I suppose you know what that does. It once you've submitted your score, there's no going back and rethinking it. Whereas if you've got a piece of paper, 5 hours later, I think you drive the next car and you think to yourself, "Hold on a second.
Yeah, this should have been a 4, not a 3.
I should have gone back and scored this car that I drove 3 hours earlier a little bit differently.
Yeah,
and now
either higher or lower. Yeah,
yeah, or higher or lower because you've driven a better or worse car.
You've now got that basis of comparison. Yeah.
You've now got a reference point, whereas you should really judge the car on its merits in the moment, which this app kind of sounds like.
It's what that's trying to promote,
what it's trying to do,
Cool. So, and then the cars, just so the listeners understand, the Astra wouldn't have been judged against the F-Pace per se.
No.
They are taken out of their categories, and the cars are judged, and I'm going to read you quickly. Cars compete horizontally and vertically, which means that they are evaluated against their competitors in their segment, and then the winner is the car with the highest total score.
I like that explanation of horizontally and vertically, because if you think about it, yes, you're not going to put an Opel Astra up against a Toyota Fortuna.
No.
They're not the same type of vehicles.
Yeah.
They're built to do different things.
Yeah.
So you can't really compare them against each other, but in a sense, you are comparing them against each other in terms of the overall value and how well they do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So the Fortuna is supposed to be the 7-seater that has off-road capability.
Mm-hmm.
The Astra's not meant to be that.
No.
But how much better, and this is now where, like, let's say the vertically bit comes in, how much better is the Fortuna than, let's say, a Trailblazer or a Ford Everest or some of the Jeeps and that? Is it head and shoulders? By how much is it better than those opponents?
Okay.
Does it do what it says on the tin?
Does it do what it says on the tin, but how well does it do it?
Yeah.
You know, so that margin of greatness is measured. That's like your vertical. Your horizontal is great. So we're saying that it's 20% better than its competitors. But the Astra is now 22% better than It's competitive, which is going to be like the Focus and the Golf and the Megane and all that sort of stuff. And if that one's 22%, that 22% is higher than the 20% of the Fortuna. That makes the Astra a leader over the Fortuna.
Which means you're not really comparing the two cars against each other. You're comparing their position against their peers in their category and how much they're above their peers rather than against the Fortuna.
And when you keep that in mind, all of a sudden the Opel Astra starts to make sense.
Yes.
If you take a look at the tech that is plumbed into the new Opel Astra and the price that it comes in at, you sit there and you say, you should be paying twice the price for this vehicle. Yeah. It's got adaptive headlights. There's collision mitigation and all this sort of stuff. The stuff that you're getting on executive saloons, you're getting now in a compact hatch.
Yeah.
But Opel has been that way inclined for a very long time. I remember when I was listening to the intro, crotch rocket, rocket rocket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I was in my teens, I used to love the Cadet T.
Yes.
Remember the Cadet T? Yeah. And then you got the one with the electronic dials.
Yes.
One of the first cars. The GSI had it. One of the first cars to come out with an electronic dashboard. That was Opel.
Yeah.
Opel. And they're still doing it today.
I had a mate who had an Astra. It was a 2 liter. It was one of the fancy ones.
200 IE or 200 IS.
And yeah, the 200 IS.
The 200 IE, the turbocharged one.
Like, and it was
the turbo
green
one, but the IS was the one that was the police issue. But it was police issue for a reason.
Jeez, like, but well, anyway, this was an Italian mate of mine, also from the East, 1610 for life.
he had to drop it in, didn't he?
He put so much sound into this car. It was crazy. And it was just the coolest car to drive around Joburg. And it was fantastic.
Vehicle.
And it was loud, which was really, really, it was good.
Lawrence had an Astra as his vehicle, one of our also regular guests here.
Yeah.
That Astra, I mean, served such fantastic duty. Also, go anywhere, do anything, and just almost a canny do it. Great car to drive, fantastic car to drive. And those vehicles took a car of the year.
Yes, I believe. This was their second win, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's their third. I think it's their third win because I think they had back-to-back where they had the Cadet and the Astra.
Sure.
And they both took it. And, you know, so it's a nice return. And what we like about this winner is because we had the likes of the F-Pace in there. You know, there was the Passat and the Tiguan and that. Those are really good popular cars from popular brands.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that Opel's not popular, but locally it doesn't have that sort of sales presence that the VWs and the Toyotas have.
Sure.
You know, a couple of pricey vehicles in there, and here we go with a car that relates to the people. A car that the people would actually consider purchasing. Mm. And that is now your car of the year, and rightly so. It is. It's a great drive. If you take a look at the various different aspects that the judges look at, from ergonomics to interior build quality, exterior build quality, the styling aspect to a point, the drivability, safety, features, price point, all those sort of things get taken into account. And yes, you can understand why the Astra takes it.
Fantastic.
It is one of those. If you're in the market for it, I am going to recommend it. And I do recommend it to all the people. If you're sitting there and you're thinking about, you know, getting a car that can do the family thing, but has a little bit of maybe a sporty edge to it, or you just need something that's properly reliable, do yourself a favor and go and drive the Astra.
You know,
if you're in the market, just check it out.
Yeah.
You may be surprised. Even if you're not a fan, even if you're a VW fan, we know VW and Opel don't see eye to eye.
Yeah.
Even if you are a VW fan, just go and drive it and see what the fuss is about. Because there is a bit of a fuss and it's warranted.
Fantastic.
So, I mean, you say all the time, there is no bad car today. You know, very few and far between.
Yeah, few and far between.
there are hardly any bad cars today.
Yeah, hardly.
But the thing that Car of the Year does is it shows you which car is head and shoulders above its peers.
Yeah, motoring excellence.
And this year, the Opel Astra is it.
100%. Mm. So well done to Opel on that. I really think it's great. And
that said, you know, you go with any one of those finalists.
You can't go
wrong. You're making a smart choice.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Completely.
Because they're all finalists for a reason. Because they are. And there's a whole process to this. So you have quarterfinals, semifinals. There's an elimination process that goes on for months beforehand before it starts making its way into the public limelight.
Yeah.
And we just ended up with our 10 finalists. And, you know, there were 25 or something cars before that also qualified, if not more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with our involvement as a brand, you know, elevating it and bringing the digital elements into, you know,
taking it to the public,
really taking it to the public was great, and the traction. So thanks to anyone who did get involved. I mean, Coty Drag Race, first time ever on
that
Twitter.
That was super cool.
Where you could race a car by using a hashtag. I mean, that's just really out the box thinking, and it just tied so nicely into the event, you know. So well done to our social
beautifully
team on
themed,
that.
Yeah.
Really, really great.
Brilliant.
Really,
I think we've upped this to world standards, and I think next year is just going to be even better.
Better, fantastic. Mm. Well, we can't wait, and you know, we'll keep you up to date and let you know what's happening with that. Which brings us on to our next topic, guys. We were obviously all at the SA Motorsports Festival last year. We went and
oh yes, we were. That's right.
Yeah,
we were.
And
sorry, I did so many events. I know, it's all just sort of blurring into which one was this?
I haven't attended one of these before, but the South African Bike Festival kicks off on the 26th of May. So
I'm actually quite stoked. I want to. I missed it last year. I think I was away. We were filming or something of the sorts, and I'm so stoked to attend this one because it was apparently pretty well attended.
Yes, it was,
you know,
well
there
attended,
was in terms of both the public, the feet through the gate, and the displays.
Yes.
You know, they said they had fantastic interactive displays that were there and the families.
Yeah.
The families could have an absolute jaw. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, you don't have to be a kind of biker to go to an event like this.
No.
There are areas for kids. There's good food out there. You know, there's obviously a lot live entertainment. And then there's obviously, I know like this year they've got the Super GP Championship happening, the 1,000cc championship, South African championship. That, I mean, so there's a race. I mean, you know what? You don't have to be a petrolhead to really enjoy 1,000cc motorbikes going around the track. I mean, it is super, super exciting. So that's really cool. And then there's a custom bike championship. There's some obviously going to be some classics on display there. And then something that's new, and again, Auto Trader getting involved and getting behind motorsport, motorsporting events in South Africa, is the nearly new motorcycle shop. And basically what we've done as a brand is we understand that there are a lot of people who want to get into or onto a motorbike, but sometimes can't afford new. So why don't we bring the best of secondhand bikes to the South African public? And we've got the nearly new motorcycle shop happening
like
at
bear.
Yeah, exactly. So
love
come down,
idea.
Look at some, you know, some really, really decent secondhand bikes. And, you know, sign up for a test drive and you can test drive the bikes, which will really, really be fun. So that's really, really
actually
great.
Maybe I shouldn't go.
Well, this is
going to start reviewing motorbikes.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, we've been through it, and you may have seen it. Just on the topic of the bikes,
we've got rookie riders,
which is going out and rolling out. You know, also bi-weekly, we've got a new episode that comes out, and it's George. It's you and I that go through the process of learning to ride.
Yeah.
So we have learned to ride. We just got to wrap up that license fiasco.
Yeah.
But you know, we spoke about it and we've done it, and it got me involved in thinking, you know, why go through all of that and not benefit from it, you know? Even if it's just on a recreational side of things,
well,
you know.
Well, let me just ask you this question. Being you know, you obviously are a car, more kind of a car.
Yeah, I'm a top car.
And George, you're a car person as well. Have you always liked bikes, or what was it that made you guys do rookie riders? What was it that said, you know what, I want to get onto that crotch rocket and open that thing up?
Yeah, you know, I think it goes
down to crisis. Yeah.
do what I'm not there yet. it goes down to what Chad just said. You know, it's a different experience.
Mm.
It's motoring in a different way, and you get onto that motorbike, and it's nothing like riding or driving a car.
It's absolutely.
I mean, you ride a bike yourself.
I'm still on the scooter. Yeah.
You do it every single day of your life.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't commute. I mean, I've got nothing against bikes. I move out of their way on the freeways, and you know, they've got a place. But it's an absolutely different experience.
Sadly, I get really sad about it because I can see the benefit of commuting on a bike, and yes, I would encourage guys to do that. But sadly, there just isn't the structure and the discipline on the roads.
I think you still got too many jackasses on the road.
Yeah, the guys aren't aware of bikes. They're not watching for bikes, and it is a really risky thing to do. Commute on a bike and I was just taking a look at it. I don't often travel in like peak hour traffic on the main arterials and that. I'll nip around the back roads and that. So I don't encounter too much traffic.
Yeah.
But sitting there coming to the studio today, I just sat there and I was taking a look at all these vehicles and I'm like, there's about 15-20% of you actually paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just watching the cars around me and I'm like, one, unroadworthy vehicles.
Yeah.
The number of cars with brake lights out, tail lights out is astronomical.
Yeah.
You know, they've got one side tail light work, brake light working, no high level brake light. And, you know, for somebody on a bike, that's quite hazardous. You're constantly needing to scan around, and it's so easy to miss it if that vehicle's only got one little brake light.
Because I think when you do ride a bike, you are far more in tune with what's happening on the road.
You know what I find is you want to be more in tune, and I think your brain kind of does that.
Yes.
But with the crash helmet on,
yeah,
it limits your vision to a degree that makes that difficult.
Yeah, so you lose some of your peripheral vision.
You lose your peripheral. Yeah. You're inside the shell, so you can't really hear what's going on outside. Whereas in a car, you can probably hear a bit
more. So your sense of hearing is muted as well.
You know, and Chad said it a while ago, your situational awareness starts to drop when you're on a motorbike. And I think for me, that's the all of those factors together just equal, you know, make one mistake and
risky. And I mean, yeah, I'd still love to ride, and I'd ride probably a lot more recreationally.
Yes.
You know, whether it be track days or just, you know, the weekend, couple of odd squirts and that sort of stuff on the weekend, a breakfast run or something, that I could really, you know, capture that. Yeah. Or the odd day here and, you know, need to nip back and forward to the office or something of the sorts. On a bike, yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
I love the idea of it. So
what I enjoyed a lot was the track day. So
the track work was a bug.
If there's anything I would do on a bike, it would be that day on Swat Corps, you know,
amazing.
opening that R1's or R6's throttle up that main straight was just unbelievable.
Letting it,
I mean, I know Swat Corps
really well.
I've done
a couple of laps there.
I've done some really, really hot laps at Swat Corps, and you climb onto a bike.
It's different.
And it's a totally different ball game. Yeah. It's a totally different track. You know, your turning points and everything, your braking points are completely different. And it's that beautiful, this is so familiar, but there's such a challenge involved in it. And I love being challenged as well. So
cool. Well, listen, stay tuned to this because we're obviously going to get Kelly and Nicole from SA Bike Fest into studio, and we can unpack a little bit more closer to the time. But just so that you know,
7 weeks away, eh?
7 weeks away. And if you use, we have a promo code. So if you want to go and buy a ticket, our promo code is AUTO25. And you get a 25% discount.
AUTO25.
AUTO25.
Write that down.
Yeah. AUTO25. You get 25% discount on the ticket.
25% discount on the ticket price.
That's brilliant.
Which is fantastic. So, yeah.
Because, admittedly, and it's the one criticism, I mean, we shoot straight here.
Yeah.
The ticket prices are a little steep. You know, from what I've heard, from the ticket prices are going to be, I sat there and I was like, I'm hoping I was wrong.
Well, I mean,
I'm hoping I heard wrong.
In order for them to put on the event that they put on last year, I mean, those ticket prices for me, while expensive-ish, worth the money. You know, when you go into
and
you've got kids have got stuff to do, and you've got so much going on at that event, you know, for me, a little bit pricey, but absolutely worth it.
So a standard ticket's $200.
Yeah, you see, my fear is just that. Not knowing what the festival's about or the show's about, that comes across super stiff. You know, are we just going to walk around? We're so accustomed to the Joburg International Motor Show, which was Auto Africa and the likes, very little interactive. If you take a look at the way that the RAN show has gone, you know, it's not as interactive as it was in the past. You know, it's not as well attended in terms of exhibitors as what it was in the past.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the preconceived notion that we've got of it, and that makes the ticket price seem a little stiff. But AUTO25 is going to lop 25% off of that price there for you.
100%. Exactly. I mean, if I just look at the three.
Which means it's $150.
Yeah. And
if you use our code.
Yeah. Which is not a lot.
Buy four, get one free.
Buy four, get one free.
Okay.
And I mean, listen, if you've got kids, there's spans of entertainment for the little ones.
That's the thing, yeah.
There's good food. There's over 12 bands that will be there over the 3-day period. So
plenty of food and drink vendors and the likes, craft beers, craft fusion food and the likes. Plenty of entertainment. You're getting to see a race event as well.
Exactly.
$200 isn't much, or 150. And I'm going to say 150 because you have to use Auto 25.
Yeah.
So stay tuned to our social media channels in terms of Auto Trader bikes as well. You need to understand that we've also got a biking section. So we have a biking YouTube channel, a biking Twitter account, a biking Facebook page. So Auto Trader bikes on Facebook, Twitter, the whole works, YouTube. And we're going to be promoting it and give you an idea of what's going to be happening at the festival.
Completely.
You really do need to take a look at that. And then I can promise you, you'll be able to justify the ticket price.
100%. 100%. So we'll keep you up to speed on that. And our last topic for the first segment, or first half of the show, is Auto Trader Marketplace. George, I'm going to hand this one over to you. I'm going to throw it at you. I mean, I know exactly what it's all about, but I just think...
Teach me, because I'm actually a little in the dark over here. I've been away on launches and stuff.
Okay, well, there we go. Let's teach Auto Trader Marketplace.
So, you know, let me give you the backstory. Auto Trader, 25-year-old brand. When we started out back in the days of print, we started out with a lot of private advertising. Yeah. People wanting to offload their cars to another individual. I mean, let's be honest, selling your car privately gets you a little bit more money than trading it in. And that market exists. It absolutely exists. And Auto Trader has been at the forefront of the premium side of private buying and selling for 25 years.
Yes, yeah.
The sad thing in South Africa is the safety issue.
Yeah, well, crime kind of infiltrated its way into a market that was really doing nicely, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. 25 years ago, you could buy and sell a car privately, and the chances of something a mishap happening was potentially low. Today's day and age, with the internet and with all the crime that's going on around the world and in South Africa, it's not as safe.
Yeah.
So we've tried to solve that problem. And we've been thinking about this for a number of years. How do we solve that problem?
It's not an easy one to solve.
It's not an easy one to solve, and it's been a conundrum. It's been an absolute conundrum. So there are two issues that a brand like ours has to solve when trying to build a marketplace for the private consumer. And the first issue is safety and security. So what we've done is we've partnered with the Bosch service centers. So to create a safe environment.
Nationwide.
There are over 100 of these centers around the country. And it creates an environment for the buyer and the seller to meet. And if the buyer and the seller are in a safe environment, the transaction is a lot easier to do. So that's the first thing. Bosch service centers and Auto Trader being able to partner on this creates that safe environment. The second thing is finance. Being able to get finance on a private vehicle is perceived to be difficult to do. I'm here to tell you, it's not as difficult as you think.
Okay.
And Auto Trader Marketplace has the facilities to provide finance across most of the banks in the country, and so you've got the entire recipe to go and confidently buy or sell a car privately using autotradermarketplace.co.za. And I think the way of private buying and selling is exactly positioned the way it should be with Auto Trader Marketplace.
Fantastic. So from if I'm selling a car, or even if I'm buying a car through Auto Trader Marketplace, how am I ensured that I'm not buying a lemon?
So if you want to list your car, if you're a seller, for instance, you want to list your car in Auto Trader Marketplace, there's a bunch of hoops that you've got to jump through.
Okay.
We'd have to have another 30 minutes on the show to run through all of those hoops. But Bosch service centers help us in vetting that car.
Fantastic.
So first of all the cars on Auto Trader Marketplace have been vetted through Bosch.
Okay.
And so the seller and that car is not a lemon. I'm not saying that you can't potentially get a lemon, because at the end of the day, the car is a secondhand vehicle, and you've got to do your homework as a buyer, and you've got to check that everything that has been checked is actually legitimate.
Okay. All right.
But we trust that we're taking the risk out.
Exactly. So Bosch put that car through its paces,
yes,
and almost give it a stamp of approval, I'm assuming, to say, listen, this thing is good to go. We're happy that you can sell this car confidently through Marketplace.
I mean, barring opening up the engine and taking off the gearbox.
For sure.
100%. And, looking in the places that we can't look.
Yes.
By and large, we have lowered the risk in that car.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And then from a buyer, so I've gone onto the site, autotradermarketplace.co.za. I see a car that I like. I can then put forward an application to apply for finance to buy that vehicle.
Yes. So those hoops that we get the seller to jump through is to protect the buyer. Now, to protect the seller, we make the buyer jump through a bunch of hoops. So we want to know who you are.
Yes.
We want your ID number. We want your name, so that we know that at the end of the day, if you pull something that you shouldn't be pulling as a buyer, we've got all your details.
100%. So really eliminating the risk. Kind of the risk with private buying and selling.
Well, I mean, eliminating is,
eliminating
is lowering the risk.
Lowering the risk.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, I don't think anybody can eliminate the risk totally.
No.
But we are lowering the risk to a level that I think is acceptable.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I mean, a great initiative. We've already seen a good uptake, you know, on the platform.
We've had rave reviews.
Rave reviews.
People that have sold their cars off that platform have absolutely loved the experience. They don't have to deal with tire kickers. They can deal with serious buyers.
Yeah.
And we introduced two serious people that actually want to do a deal.
100%.
It gives a private seller, by the sounds of things, a temporary dealership almost.
Pretty much.
And that's what the buyer's getting out of it, is a dealership style experience, but from a private seller.
Because the consumer has chosen that he wants to sell his car. He doesn't want to hand it over to anybody else to sell it for him.
No, he's doing this deal himself.
So he still remains in control, in total control of the whole of the situation.
So, I mean, if you had to put the two kind of experiences side by side, the easy way is to go and trade your car in. I mean, there's a place for that.
What a way to take a bath, hey?
Well, I mean, it depends. Depends if you're a silly consumer or not.
Mm.
You know, so that's the easy way. You can do it. It's easy. You know that you're gonna get your car traded in. If you're willing to take the time, if you have the time, and if you want to go through the effort, there is an alternative way.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Well, great. Guys, thanks so much for unpacking, on those topics. And, we're going to go to an ad break now. And when we come back, we're going to chat to Chad about the new Mini Cooper Countryman. You had your first drive in last week, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it would have been last week.
Last week.
Wow, time flies when you're having fun.
And we're going to have a look at the Chevy Trailblazer. So we'll be back after this.
Great stuff.
So, T, do you know that we host Motoring's biggest power hour?
Yes, I do.
And do you know that it's not just a show about cars, but it's a show that covers a host of relevant motoring topics?
Yes, I do.
And do you know that there are over 1 billion cars currently in use on Earth, and that the new car smell is composed of over 50 volatile organic compounds?
No.
Make sure you're up to speed with all things motoring by tuning in to Auto Central every Monday morning at 9 a.m. just after the Gareth Cliff Show, or download the podcast on autotrader.co.za. Auto Central, motoring's biggest power hour, powered by Auto Trader.
There's a place way down in Red Star where a boy lives behind bricks. He's got an eye for girls in 18, and he turns them out like tricks. I went down to a place in Red Star.
news and reviews on Auto Central.
Right, we're back. News and reviews. As I was saying just before we left for the break, Chad, you drove the new Mini Countryman.
Yes.
The first drive impression is on Auto Trader side.
The first drive impression is up there. Yes.
Yeah. And, so run us through that, man.
Well, it's the second generation Mini Countryman.
Okay.
And I mean, you need to know, my story says it all as well, but you need to know where the Countryman sort of fits into things. And you need to go back to the sort of late 60s when they created, it was made under Morris and under Austin,
okay.
The Mini. Okay, both of them were producing it. And they started out and they called one the Austin Mini Countryman. Morris made what was known as the Morris Traveller. And this was now just it had a slightly elongated back. It was 9 centimeters longer than the regular Mini. And the rear window was a little more upright and it had these barn doors. And it just made it a little more practical. While the Mini wasn't bad and was quite practical and a massive popular sales success for Mini and British Leyland and the British Motor Company, it had a couple of shortcomings. And that was luggage space was something that, you know, was a little tight in the original Mini. And that's now where the Countryman or the Traveller came into its own, as it offered a little more luggage space. It just made it a little more practical. And soon it started spawning off a couple of alternatives. You know, the people using it to cart their dogs around, using it for business and that. And eventually, you know, it spawned on the likes of the little Mini panel van and the likes, as this small, compact, little runabout that's actually quite practical and can be used as a bit of a DIY sort of maneuver. A little, almost a mini bucky in a sort.
A mini bucky, yeah.
Yes, a mini bucky of sorts. But, I mean, it's been a while, and that was the original Countryman and Traveller were phased out. And
was that the one that had the barn doors?
Yeah, it had
the
barn doors at the back. Yeah, of the original one. So there's two little barn doors.
One of my aunts had one when I was, I think I was like 8 or 9 years old or something.
Yeah.
One of my aunts had one of these with those barn doors in the back. Loved that car. Absolutely loved that car.
Yeah.
It was like a little panel van.
Very much like a little panel van. Yes.
Did the first generation of the new one have the barn doors?
If I'm not mistaken, it had the barn doors
now
they've gone to a hatch, yeah.
I think that's sad.
It cleans up the lines and it makes the styling considerably more Mini. When BMW bought over the Mini name rights and started building the Mini, we had the Mini hatch that came out, and that was about 2000 or so. And it took about 9 to 10 years before they actually brought back the Countryman name. There was enough of a demand for them to require a vehicle that was a little larger, now had 5 doors instead of just the 3-door setup. Yeah. It was a little more practical, and BMW decided, well, listen, if we're going to build this, we're going to make it a decent, respectable size.
Yeah.
So this is only Mini by name. That's all it is. This is actually quite a large vehicle.
Okay.
And we're now in the second generation, and this is the second generation of the new Mini Countryman.
Yeah.
Okay. Technically, it's the third. But the BMW Mini, it's the second generation. And it's also a little larger this time round again. So
so they've made it a little bit bigger.
It's 3 centimetres wider.
Okay, well,
is it higher off the ground?
It's got a slightly higher ride height. It's 1.3 centimetres taller, but it's a colossal 20 centimetres longer than normal Mini.
Jeez, it's like
a
limousine.
Somebody's been lying to you about what 20 centimeters is, just saying. Okay.
Whatever. Ruler, that's 20 centimeters.
Yes, that is. That foot and a half
it's
that you were showing
just
now. Funny
how we always go back to the school ruler.
You do.
Well, I think that is my first point of reference when I go, okay, 30 centimeters
is
about
it's a foot.
That long.
Yeah. 12 inches.
So can this be compared to a crossover?
It is actually a crossover.
It is a crossover.
It is a crossover now. So it's not this little hatch. It's only Mini by name and by styling.
Okay.
Okay. So it's still styled to look and to have the shapes and the proportions of a traditional Mini hatch. But it's for those that like the styling of it, but need a little more practicality and space. And space is actually quite generous. It's actually quite a large cabin in there.
I've seen, you know, this Mini is big.
It is. It is a big vehicle.
It is a big vehicle. This is no longer a Mini in the terms of small.
Like I said, only by name only.
By name only,
And it's fantastically practical. At the moment, we're only getting it with 2 motor variants.
Okay.
1.5 three-cylinder. Let me just get the numbers in. The 1.5 three-cylinder is making 100 kilowatts, 220 newton meters of torque. Okay. Then we've got the 2-liter four-cylinder. in the coupe, in what is essentially the Cooper S or the Countryman S. And that's got a four-cylinder, 2-liter, 141 kilowatts.
Not supercharged.
It's turbocharged.
Turbocharged.
Both of them are turbocharged. One's a turbocharged 3-cylinder. The other one's a turbocharged 4-cylinder.
What happened to the superchargers in Mini?
That was not a great time
for
Mini. yeah, that's a time that they'd rather forget. The motor, if you picked one up off the dealership floor, it was cracking. That little supercharger was wonderful.
Yeah.
1.6-liter supercharged motor in the original Cooper S. Yeah. They went over to a 1.6 turbo. You know, it was the Prince motor that was shared with Peugeot as well. And that really good vehicle, and it just had much better reliability. Sadly, the supercharger setup and the strain that it was placing on the motor, because unfortunately a supercharger is a little parasitic in the sense that it takes power to make power.
Yeah, and it works better on bigger engines.
It does, yes. Yeah. So on the smaller motor, it wasn't ideal, and I think largely down to our climate and that. And it was a lot of new tech that BMW was plumbing into this. You know, it was pretty much the first front-wheel drive that they were producing. You know, they were still finding their feet.
Yeah.
The consequent ones got markedly better. And you could find an early Cooper S form relatively cheap chips now, but it's now 17 years old.
Turbocharged.
2-liter turbocharged in the S, 141 kilowatts, 218 newton meters. It does feel the extra weight though. So those that have driven a Cooper
this is
hatch,
a rocket inside a lunchbox.
Space case.
I'm going to take that analogy. A rocket in a lunchbox is the Cooper, a little Mini Cooper.
Okay.
This one is a rocket in a briefcase, in an overnight bag.
I remember space case.
But no. This one you can feel the extra weight. You know, the little bit of extra weight you can feel. So the performance is a little stunted.
Okay.
It's not going to be as sprightly and as responsive as a Cooper hatch.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to let that slide. We're going to understand, you know, you can't have your, you know, your cake and eat it.
But fundamentally still a fun car to drive?
Very fun. And it's got fantastic dynamics off-road. I'm not going to say off-road, but on gravel roads.
Front-wheel drive.
So dirt roads. These are front-wheel drive. Like I say, I just want to dial back a little bit. We said there are going to be two, there's the two motors, the 1.5 and the 2-litre. There is talks of a 2-litre turbo diesel coming out a little later on in the year, which is going to be great. It's going to be the first time that the Mini is offered with a diesel motor.
That's what I was going to say. I've never seen a Mini with a diesel motor. That'll be very interesting.
Very interesting. And then there's also talks of them possibly bringing out the 4-track, which is the all-wheel drive version.
Ah,
sure. To answer that question of yours.
You know what? That, in a 2-litre turbo, will corner like snot to
its
top.
It's going to go anywhere and just about do anything. It's not going to climb massive ravines or Sony Pass, but for those that have got proper active lifestyles, it's got all the interior space that you want. It's got quite a generous boot, I might add. You know, something that's not known in a Mini.
Yes.
The Countryman's got a generous boot. That's where that 20 centimeters is really being felt, is in the boot. And it's got legroom for the rear passengers. There's enough headroom. You know, it's for the first time ever, it's got full 5 seats.
Okay.
So it can seat five adults.
Adults.
In a Mini.
Yeah.
5 adults, 3 across to the back. It's fantastic. And, I mean, it's got 3 different drive modes. So you've got your green, which keeps things nice and friendly and pleases the bunny huggers. You've got your normal, which just sort of adapts a little bit to daily driving and is the one that you're probably going to drive it in the most. And then it's got sport, which is your maximum go-kart feel. And I will quote that because the little center screen, which is now a touchscreen, it's a touchscreen unit that they've got in the center now that's got your navigation and everything if you spec it with.
Mm-hmm.
It says maximum go-kart feel. So it stiffens up all the things that need to be stiffened up, makes it nice and sprightly. Interesting cars. And, of course, a little couple of crackles from the exhaust as well, just to let you know that you're...
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, I've always been a Mini fan.
It is a fun
car. You know, just in terms of how I judge vehicles, in terms of what they look like, I've never really been too concerned about what's under the hood. But I know that makes a massive difference.
It does, yeah.
But they're still nice cars to look at. When you see them on the road, they kind of, you know... A Mini always puts a smile on my face. I don't know. Can't knock it.
No, you can't. You can't really knock it.
No.
And it is. I think it's a really good car. Strangely enough, and I was pleasantly surprised because I wasn't. I'm a little traditional in that sense. I'm like, Mini, why do you want to go and make a Countryman that's actually defying the name?
Yes.
Yeah. Why do you want to go and make a large car when your name is Mini? Why not stick to the basics? Yeah. Stick to what you know, type thing. And I've had to reevaluate that and say, no, you know what, this Countryman makes sense. It's for those that want the style of a Mini but need something a little more practical. There's a car that offers it for you.
Fantastic.
And it is. I mean, and I really do enjoy looking at the vehicles. I like driving them as well. There's a great fit and finish to it.
Yeah.
There's plenty of packages, so you can customize it as well. You can go for, you know, a JCW package, which puts the John Cooper Works body and wheels and that on it, and that looks fantastic. We got a couple of pictures up of the JCW kitted Mini Countryman in our first drive impression, which is up on our site under news and reviews.
You can is that the grey one?
That's a JCW kit.
Okay.
And it looks tidy.
No, it does look nice.
It looks proper. I think the red one's got a JCW kit on as well in those photos.
Okay. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it does. And really, really nice. That said, the non-JCW one doesn't look bad either.
Yes.
You know, nice, slightly more subtle, but you can pick. You want to go with a JCW package, you want to go with one of the chili packages, you want to go with an ice package, and they offer, and in those packages, they've got a whole host of optional extras. They just tailor the car to those that are looking for a more entertaining, stylish ride. Those that are looking for a slightly more sporty one.
Yeah.
Those that are looking for something that's a little more fashion-like. Mm. You know, those offer it there.
Really, really nice. And I see here from a price range from 422,000 up to about 509,000.
The 1.5 Countryman in with a manual gearbox. Mm-hmm. Very nice gearbox. 422,000. Yeah. Naturally, 440 for the Steptronic.
Yep.
Also, lovely gearbox. Fantastic gearbox. So no need to knock the automatics and that. The manual in the Cooper or in the Countryman S, I'm going to call it the Countryman S. There's still a little contention about the Cooper in the name there. 490.
Okay.
And then call it 510 for the Steptronic Countryman S. And you're getting a whole lot of car there.
Yeah.
So really not bad. And of course, it's backed by the usual, you know, the usual sort of warranties and motor plans and the likes that one gets from BMW.
Yeah. Cool. Quickly. So listen, I mean, that's the Mini unpacked for you. So jump onto AutoTrader.co.za, go and look at our news and reviews, and you'll see Chad's article there. Chad, just quickly, we're not going to do a deep dive.
Yeah, I'm not going to go because we did one on the video.
Yes.
The Chev Trailblazer.
Okay, cool.
Chev Trailblazer, they've given it a couple of updates. So it's largely just a facelift and that. But what Linus and myself did is we went out and we sampled it on the road and off the road. And we took a look at a couple of the new safety features that have been plumbed into the new Trailblazer.
Okay.
And I firmly believe that has pushed it up into what is now a big three there, and you're sitting with Fortuna, Ford Everest,
and
the Trailblazer. And if you're looking for a seven-seater, all-wheel drive, you know, diesel that can go anywhere and do anything, it really can. It is a very, very capable 4x4 off-road vehicle.
Yeah. And it looks good.
It looks so much better because they've revised the front end. They've got some LED daytime running lights in it. The infotainment's been beefed up. And then, of course, like I say, so much safety. It still drives great. I love the way that it drives. The 2.8, that motor pulls like a steam train.
Sure.
I really, really do like the Trailblazer, and I think it's a good-looking vehicle with fantastic value for money. Our full review is on our YouTube channel, so you can go and take a look at it there. It's about 8 minutes long or so.
Fantastic.
And go and see what we think about it as we take it on-road and off-road there, and we just give you the ones and zeros.
Well, Chad, thanks very much. We can, we'll continue to do car reviews as we do at Auto Central. And yes, another, you know, something that we are really, really interested in and something that we're at the forefront at is tech in the motoring industry. And this is where I'm going to call on George again to unpack two stories, George, that I actually got off your blog, funny enough. So using some insights and articles that you've written there, because this was quite interesting to me. I actually have been a victim
really?
Of car jamming, and I had a laptop stolen. Driving home from work, quickly stopped at a garage I didn't put petrol in. I stopped to buy like bread and milk. Please just stop and get some stuff on the way home. And I was in and out, got into the car, drove home, opened the boot, and I was like, well, where's my laptop bag? Thought it was at the office, wasn't at the office, and then went back, saw the footage.
I've been remote jammed.
Yeah, remote jamming. So,
press call.
Yeah,
so, they got my cell phone.
So, how are they doing it?
How are they doing it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you remember probably about a year ago,
yes.
We spoke about the Jeep.
Yes, I remember.
It was a controlled situation, but they still proved, these white hat hackers proved that they could take control of that Jeep, which was quite scary. And then, you know, that led to 1.4 million cars being recalled. And and then VW made headlines where you could open a car that had been produced over the last 20 years. Any VW. You could open it up. Not only could you open it up remotely, you could even start the ignition remotely. So these white hat hackers continually try and break into cars, which I think is a good thing because it kind of shows where the vulnerabilities are and allow the car manufacturers to fix the loopholes.
Yeah.
But it's a scary, scary thing. And in South Africa, you'll see signs all over the place where, you know, car jamming, be careful that your doors are locked. So I suppose the main thing is, how do you avoid it? How do we avoid car jamming? Because what these criminals do is they wait for you to park your car, and then they send a signal that that jams the remote control. If everybody's got that you know, little button on their remote control, it jams the remote control, and then it confuses the signal to the car, which then stops your car from being locked.
So the car doesn't lock, but it still gives you the signal like it's locked. Am I right?
Yes, and
so the lights still and the car go bleep bleep, and you think, okay, like I'm walking away now.
And you think your car's locked. And in most cases, sometimes one door locks, sometimes two doors lock.
Okay.
So it all it does is it confuses the car.
Yeah.
And then they enter the car and they take whatever's inside that that is of value. So the trick is really just to spend one or two more minutes, lock your car while you're still standing next to it. And check every single door.
I do that.
Now.
Yes, exactly. So I lock and then I'm...
Because you always think it won't happen to me.
Okay.
This is stuff that happens to somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, you thought that as well, you know.
I must say, I don't go and check all five doors, though. So I'll lock the car and I'll check my front door and maybe the passenger door, you know, on my side of the vehicle. But I don't walk around, do the boot and both other sides. So, okay, I'm going to spend an extra 20 seconds doing that.
It's an extra 20 or 30 seconds. Just walk around and check every single door.
Yeah.
Because those car jamming systems confuse the car and maybe one door gets left open and the criminals just walk into your
life. I suppose, and your blog does allude to it, is that the more kind of tech that is getting put into vehicles makes it
vulnerable
mm-hmm. because there are clever guys out there who know how to kind of create other tech that can confuse the tech that's been built.
Well, if you think about it, nothing's really changed. Okay. I mean, in the days of steering locks and gear locks and gorilla locks, if you remember those.
I do remember the gorilla locks.
As old as Chad myself and, you know, the midlife crisis and
and whatnot.
If you remember those days,
yeah.
I mean, there it was just, you know, it wasn't technology that that we have today, but it was still technology.
Yep.
And they used to come with that Freon spray, spray the gorilla lock, hit it with a hammer, and bang, God. Bob's your uncle.
Yes,
You know, so it hasn't really changed. The criminals are just getting to be as smart as the technology.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Exactly. You know, so they're going to find a way to get into your vehicle.
So you've still got to physically check your car.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could be in trouble.
And I think, obviously, having read your blog, and I kind of sit here now and I go, we have come full circle, because you do allude to what else can be done to stop this from happening. And I'll let you the cat out the bag, not me. But...
Well, I mean, physically checking the car.
Yeah.
And
you can lock the car door with the key, which was how it all started back in the day, wasn't it?
Back in the day, you can lock the car with a key. I mean, a lot of the keys are disappearing out of cars nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, my car has a key slot, but it's in the driver door only, and that's it. And most cars still have that.
Okay.
But I don't know, Chad can kind of give some insights into, you know, how many cars are actually coming with no key slots nowadays?
There will always be a key slot. There will be a key slot to allow you to get in just in case the remote fails. Yeah. So even when you have your, you know, your keyless entry and your remote start and that sort of system where there is actually no physical key, there is a physical key. It sits inside the fob. You'll possibly see a little button on the side and you'll be able to pull out a hard metal key out of it. Yeah. So there you've, George, you just strip your one.
Just like that.
There we go. Yeah. So now there will still be a place for you to insert that key to be able to open up the vehicle.
And
to
that
be able
will
to
override...
Get in.
Most of the systems, then, I'm assuming.
Well, it'll manually open the driver door.
Yeah. You're going to be able to get into the car. You may not be able to start it in the case of a flat battery or something of the sorts, but you will be able to get in. So they have thought about this, and there are fail safes.
So look, remote jamming, we know, is still real. Just check your cars, you know, make sure the doors are always locked. And then, George, something else that I saw on your blog was, I see, and I haven't read the article, but I see there's an app that's been built for... vehicle accidents.
Yes. So now, I mean, your smartphone comes with a bunch of what's referred to as accelerometers.
Okay.
It's little gyroscopes that are inside the phone. You don't even know they're there. But your telephone knows exactly how level it is, whether it's accelerating, whether it's decelerating. Your smartphone is not called a smartphone for nothing.
No. Mm. It's a smartphone. So
what some clever people have done is, and it's a South African, just by the way, hashtag, have built a application that takes this these accelerometers and uses it inside your car. So if you have an accident, this application will automatically send signals to the authorities, to emergency services, and you know, possibly to your next of kin to say that there's a problem. And I think it's absolutely brilliant because it takes your smartphone and turns it into a safety device.
Mm. Sure.
That's very clever, yeah.
Because the smartphone is going to be under the same sorts of forces as you are inside the car inside. When you have an accident. And then it automatically takes those G forces and sends them on to whoever you want to send them on to.
And I think with the, you know, I'm sure the insurance companies are absolutely loving this because this will help either prove or disprove any kind of he said, she said kind of.
It's probably early days for that.
Yeah, sure, still early days, but I think it will get to that.
Certainly eventually. Getting there, yeah.
So, yeah. So the name of this app is called Crash Detect, CrashDetecch. And I think it's an absolutely brilliant initiative. And you know, if you can go and Google it and go and find out a little bit more about it, but I think it's brilliant. And well, I think every single person should have it.
Yeah, you can monitor, detect, and response. I mean, they've got four packages here, from free up till 109 rand a month, which is absolutely nothing if you think about what you can buy for 109 rand.
Well, the free one gives you 30 trips a month. If you think about it, you really do. I mean, if you're going to work and back every day, you're probably doing 60 trips a month.
Yeah, 40.
40 trips a month.
21 working days. 21 working days. Yeah. So yeah.
If you drive on a weekend, 40 odd. So yeah. so you know.
Not Chad, some of us go to the office every day too.
My bad.
So there is a free option, mm-hmm. and then there are paid for subscriptions as well. So I think it's a brilliant initiative. Takes the phone and really allows you not to have to buy any other fancy technology in order to let people know when you've had an accident.
Fantastic. Well, guys, listen, it's been fantastic to be back in the box here for an hour. Monday mornings, 10 o'clock. And thanks very much for those that have tuned in. Hashtag Auto Central. Follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, at AutoTraderSA. And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with some fresh new content. And again, if there's stuff that you want us to unpack, we're here to help. We've got a host of journalists that are really, really up to speed with what's happening in the industry. And we are the motoring show on Cliff Central. So it's good to be back. Thanks, guys.
Brilliant.
Awesome. George, cheers. Chad.
Yeah, thank you.
Fazana, you were so quiet today, huh?
So quiet.
I'm going to get you onto a mic, I promise. All right, guys, cheers. Have a good week.
Not everyone who likes cars is a petrolhead. Some of us prefer the unmotoring side of cars. Yet we all spend so much time in these machines that they have become an extension of our personalities and reflect quite a bit about who we are and where we are in our life stages. On Auto Central, we understand this.
Make sure you're up to speed with all things motoring by tuning into Auto Central every Monday morning at 9 a.m. just after the Gareth Cliff Show. Or download the podcast on autotrader.co.za. Auto Central, motoring's biggest power hour. Powered by Auto Trader.
CliffCentral.com.